Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of QSR Uncut. I'm your host, Danny Klein, the editorial director here at QSR. And so, you know, it's been an interesting over the years we've been recording this podcast. I think we're in episode 120-something by now, but we seem to talk to a lot of brands in this healthy, fast casual juice and smoothie space. And, you know, I think there's a reason for that, as our guests will probably do a much better job of explaining how the consumer is kind of taking us into this new world. So we're joined by SipFresh CEO Sharon Arthoffer. As always, I went over how to pronounce that and then I still stumbled upon it. But SipFresh is one of our 40/40 brands actually this year of emerging fast casuals. But Sharon, first of all, thank you for joining us. I will open the floor to you to tell us a little bit about your background, about the brand, and we'll get into it from there.
Well, thank you so much, Danny, for having me. It's a pleasure. And so to give you just a quick background, I started, as you and I discussed, my career back in New York, and it was traditional packaged goods marketing. And I got great experience, ground level experience in very traditional marketing platforms, and I'm very lucky to get those. From there, I got a bee in my bonnet and really wanted to go retail and started a retail business in New York. Spent several years doing that and finally sold it when we were transferred to California for my husband's position and decided to take a breather from the retail environment. It was soft goods, gift, stationery, party things. So it was really a great business. Sold it and took a break. And then a year into it, I met two guys who were starting a startup pretzel business out in California. And they asked me, they had no retail background, and they asked me if I'd help a little. And I said, sure. And before you know it, I guess I helped in launching the brand. They had one store at the time, helped launch the brand and became, believe it or not, their first franchisee. Mm-hmm. It's now a 350 store chain and moving into other countries, and just a really fun brand to have cut my teeth for the last few years.
Is this Pretzel Maker or?
No, it's called Wetzel's Pretzels.
Oh, well, yes, I think we are familiar with that one for sure.
Yeah, so it was really fun. I mean, literally one store to where they are today, and it was fun to be on the ground floor, you know, helping make that happen. So it was great.
Yeah, now they're doing that Twisted location out in California. That's kind great. Of like a I don't know how you would describe it, sort of like a Bites Instagram type of thing, but yeah. It's very, very cool looking.
Well, and the biggest shift obviously is that they're coming out of malls and going into street side locations, and that can be a big challenge. So that's something we'll talk a little bit about when I share the SipFresh story.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, so when did that opportunity for you come about? You know, I think the origin story is a fun little cool, like I always envision in my head when I read the story on the website of this, you know, balmy evening at a local bar, you know, and people are asking the question if they can have a juice chain, you know, similar to almost like a mixology trend. But personally for you, I mean, when did you get to be introduced to SipFresh and, you know, become part of that journey?
That's exactly what happened.
We were sitting
for our table at a restaurant, at a bar, or at the bar waiting for a table. And we were mesmerized, as everyone else at the bar was, at this guy, you know, the mixologist muddling mint and rosemary and fruit and all these things to make this beautiful concoction of a cocktail. And I kept watching and thought, how do you sort of take that and streamline it into a more scalable business that is non-alcoholic? And I loved the quality of the products. I loved the flavor profiles. There was just so much that was untapped, I felt, in the beverage industry from this regard. So I hired two mixologists and put together a few different flavor profiles I thought would be interesting. We came together and put together probably 20 menus or 20 recipes. From there, I hired a chef who helped me scale it into larger quantities, but still handcrafted. So we make them in small containers and serve them in a beautiful, very visual way. So that started in 2017. We opened our very first store in a mall. So we sort of followed that pattern of what I learned from my other franchising experience and said, I really love malls. They're high traffic, great visibility, great awareness quickly. When you have 500,000 people coming through a shopping center in a month, you know, there's no better place.
Yeah.
And then I opened our first store in 2017 in November, very end of November.
So what was the reaction? Like we often talk to very entrepreneurial type of operators on this podcast, some people who started their businesses and grew them. But what was, and you know, it's always very interesting to kind of hear what the first, you know, couple days and weeks and months were, because, you know, as you know, this industry can be really difficult. And so, you know, success is always something worth talking about. But yeah, what was kind of the initial reaction from people to it?
And you know, your heart's racing those first few weeks. You know, you don't know what to expect or how you will be received. And we were so pleasantly surprised. It was a very positive reaction. I think consumers, you know, one of the things I learned again in those years of experience of doing the other franchise is people want experiences now. They don't want to just walk up and buy. You know, when you go to a coffee place, you literally place your order. You have no idea what's going on behind the wall. And then they hand you a drink at the other end. This is the exact opposite. You visually see 10 or 12 different drinks, beverages sitting on a bar. You walk up and sample them. So the first thing you do is see this beautiful, big, beautiful barrels of fresh juice with watermelon floating in them, or mango or pineapple or whatever the fruits might be, depending upon the menu that week. And then you walk by, you sample whatever you want. So you're now really engaging with the guest. They get to taste everything. And then finally, they make their decision and purchase. And that's, you know, that's probably 75% of our business is the bar and those great beverages.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I like about the brand, you know, was helped us pick in the 44 this year was, as I kind of mentioned at the opening, this category has gotten pretty, pretty crowded lately. You know, there are a lot of franchises who are growing in this space, but I think Sipfresh has some very clear differentiators, and you mentioned a couple of them there, but you know, this idea of having in-house sipologists, which is a, you know, word that I had not heard before, and I guess probably doesn't exist elsewhere. And then, you know, sipistas, of course, too, which you kind of went over there a second ago with, you know, greeting customers with fresh samples of juice, which I think, again, is almost like going to an ice cream shop, right? So it's such a different vibe than I think, you know, your typical, let me just walk in and order the green juice and then, you know, see if I can stomach this. But I mean, just, yeah, talk a little bit about some of these differences and how they have, you know, really resonated with people.
So I think that was to your previous question. I think that's what really turned people on. They walked by, they saw this, and they thought this is totally different than anything. So we started to get crowds from day one, kind of coming up to the bar, tasting and purchasing. So for sure, it is a crowded space. The beverage category in 2010 was kind of this sleepy plod along. By, you know, I'd say by 2015, you were starting to get the smoothie operators jumping in. And then in, as you know now, it's tea and coffee and smoothie. You know, it's the same old repeatedly.
Yeah.
This is truly a different presentation. We create an environment of very, very visual first from our design. In fact, we had a great New York firm help design our storefronts. From there, you're grabbed by that, and then you're grabbed by the actual product that's on display in front of you. So it's not like, again, somebody disappears and goes and makes it. That makes us, that's a huge differentiator for us. And then our menu in general is incredibly innovative relative to everything else out there. We've got some very interested blended drinks. We obviously have four smoothies that are basic, good, delicious, high quality, fresh fruit based. But we also have some other really interesting blended drinks, like we have something called a Mango Tango, which is deliciously blended. We put some spices on it, a big sliced mangoes on top. So it's really kind of fun and sweet and tart at the same time. So very popular. We've got Strawberry Lava, which is another great one. It sort of takes you to the tropics. And then we have a piña colada that is pretty, everyone knows what that tastes like and loves it. So that separates us from the pack. And then the fact that everything starts with that fresh fruit base, very high quality product.
Right. Yeah. So tell us, when did growth start? When did that get on the radar?
Yeah. So we opened very end of 17, had a fabulous 18, and wanted to really make sure we had proof of concept. So we said, let's open a second store and see what that looks like. So we went from Los Angeles, where we were the first store, to San Diego, and had a great store opening, amazing, exactly 3 weeks before COVID hit. Mm. So we shut down, good times, as you know, California. Yeah.
Especially in malls.
Yep. So we shut down for almost a year, and then came back in 21 and said, let's see how we're doing. And 21 was an amazing year. 22 was just as good. So that's when we started saying, okay, it's time. We're going to open another store and we're going to start pulling together the foundation for a really strong franchise model.
Yeah. You know, it's such an interesting, you know, stretch there. I think I remember reading, you know, that this was a time like a lot of chains, you know, you really had the chance to kind of look at some new technology, look at the menu again, look at online order, you know, these kind of different things to sort of provide the platform to scale. And, but, you know, I would be curious, I mean, how did the malls come back? I mean, did people, you know, did that just sort of, you know, reopen to a lot of pent up demand? I think it's a really good space to be in, a healthy juice world, if you're getting people coming back from a global pandemic of all crazy things. But I mean, what was that reopening process like?
You're exactly right. There was a lot of pent up energy. You know, this is my favorite question about, because people are always shaking their heads. You're in malls, and, you know, are malls survivable? And what's happened is, the top malls in the country, and there are probably 500 or 600 of them, will survive. And they're reinventing themselves. They're creating a much more sort of, let's go and spend the day. So there is many more experiences and things to do at malls. They continue to bring people. And we're in great malls. We're very lucky. There are some really good mall operators out there. And we're in them, and we're going after them. So I'd say the hardest part is our footprint is about 800 to 1,000 feet. And that's hard to find. That's always that's a small space to find in a mall. So that's probably our challenge, not finding franchisees. It's finding the right space in the center. So malls are doing well. We're very well received there. A lot of foot traffic. I think malls have really done a good job of, as I said, reinventing themselves, re-merchandising in a way that people want to go and spend the day.
Yeah, it's so true. There's two by my house. One of them closed, and then the other has become almost like I think people always went to the mall to, you know, spend some time, but you're right. It has become like this, there are almost different stops of things and experiences you could do versus just retail shopping. And it is always packed. I mean, I've never gone there when it's been empty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the types of stores are really different than they used to be, which I think is also interesting. There's a lot more kind of go in this place and do this kind of thing. You know, it's an interesting space for sure. So tell us a little bit about the franchising, because if I'm not mistaken, I remember posting about this. It might've been like last April or so, or sometime in the spring, that this was something that you launched publicly. And the first question being is always, and you know, and you had a background in space, so it makes sense, but why did you choose the franchising path and instead of corporate growth, and you know, what went into getting that off the ground?
Yeah. First of all, I had some good experience behind me and people I could tap into who had done this before me. So I could learn from them. Obviously, we'd love to open a whole bunch of company-owned stores. We have three now, and we're going to open a few more. But obviously, from a scale standpoint, if you talk to any good franchisor, they want to make sure they have a good concept, a strong model, But in order to scale and scale at the right pace, you really need to go out and sell franchises. And you want to find those strong entrepreneurs who understand how to run a business, who have some experience in this, and can help open 2 to 3 in a reasonable amount of time. You know, we're not the operator who's going to say we're going to sell 20 to this guy and that guy. And, you know, a lot of promises that don't ever come to fruition.
Yeah.
We're really choosing very wisely the franchisees that we think are in line with our culture and can really produce so that we can grow a nice model in a reasonable amount of time. You know, it's not that easy from a financial standpoint. If you run the numbers, you know, if we want to open 200 units, we are going to rely upon the partnership of franchisees along with our own corporate stores to make that happen.
Well, this craft beverage space, though, is a pretty nice place to be in. I mean, you even got McDonald's launching a beverage-focused, I don't even know what you call that Cosmic's thing that they're doing, but, you know, with all sorts of crazy drinks. Now, of course, their health profile a little bit different, but to the broader point, though, it does seem as though this is a industry that, you know, when you recognize the mixology movement and how you could bring it forward into here, you know, it seems like there are a lot of people who have come to realize that now. So, I mean, you know, how much growth do you think there is in that space? And why do you think consumers are so, you know, open to it now? I mean, it does seem to provide almost like a, you know, a break in the middle of the day, or they're able to kind of like look at it as a affordable luxury is another phrase I hear all the time. But, you know, what is fueling some of that, do you think, just for guests right now?
You know, I think our success story has really been twofold. One is our drinks are completely different. Our beverages are different. As you said, you brought in McDonald's and some of these others that are a lot of not even really good juice, but basically a lot of sugar and syrups and flavoring and a lot of that direction. This, we start with fresh fruit products. I mean, that's the best part. We take fresh fruit and we make these really creative, different flavors, guava, strawberry, fresh watermelon, fresh mango, pineapple. There are so many good ones, strawberry mojito. All those things lend themselves to two things I think I'm learning. One is people want something new and different and good quality. And that's what we're really providing. We're not just another tea with boba or whatever might be out there that seems to be, have, you know, been out there for a long time. We're really different. We differentiate based on our flavor profile, our menu items, all those things, and the quality. The second, I think, is we're innovative. We're constantly looking at what the next thing might be. We just had a big innovation meeting and we're introducing a line of tea lemonades that are slightly different with fruit infusion. So again, there's always that opportunity to take it to a new level, and we're using fresh fruit while you do it. So I think people are eager to have that. And I'd say, you know, the third thing I'm going to throw in there is I'm finding that we are very popular among so many ethnic backgrounds, and this country is made up of that today. I find, cantaloupe is very specific to a certain region, and we have cantaloupe juice. You don't get fresh cantaloupe juice very often. So,
yeah, I mean, I go to this Guatemalan restaurant near my house, and you know, the menu is full of like juice like that. You know, or it's mango juice, you know, or whatever it might be. My daughter orders, but you know, point being, as you're saying, I think that's a much more, you know, accepted profile in a lot of countries outside the U.S. I mean, you can even look at like the sodas that you see, right? They're like pineapple soda and things like this I used to see at the stores in New York, you know, that aren't so much streamlined on, you know, some American menus. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that before, but it makes a lot of sense.
It's really fun. And the other thing, you know, I'm kind of learning from the business is, people come in now, we have a catering arm. So people come in and can order by the gallon. They take it home and, you know, they might order 3-4 different flavors for their party, their picnic, their barbecue, whatever it might be. And that's really been a big hit. And we're really growing that segment of our business where you can to go a gallon and set up your own little party. And some people will keep it mocktail and some people won't, you know, that's up to you in your own, in your own home. But, so it's got a whole nother niche of a business that we're growing there. I wish we could send our sapistas to them to serve, but, it's a lot of fun.
Well, that would be cool too, though. You could have like a roaming, experts, I guess, to come maybe do like events or something. Mm-hmm. That would be very interesting. So tell us a little bit about what is the growth, look like in terms of where you're headed. I think I read the Sun Belt, which seems to be, you know, really what a lot of brands are looking at these days, you know, Texas, Florida, what have you. But where do you envision the, you know, brand going, moving forward with this franchising opportunity?
So we are obviously Southern California, Arizona. We're targeting Colorado, Nevada, Texas. We just sold a multi-unit deal in Florida, which we're really excited about. I think the East and Southeast are going to be very popular for us. So yes, the Sun Belt states are going to be really good. So that's our focus right now. And you know, one of the things we haven't talked about, and I'm probably jumping ahead here, but I think one of the things that's attractive to franchisees today is our low cost of entry. It's not one of these where you have to spend, you know, a couple million dollars on a pad and, you know, street location fighting with a lot of other of the same category. This is very low cost of entry, really simple operations, and a great labor model. So I think those states are going to be poised to do very well as we roll this out.
Yeah, talk about the model a little bit more. You know, of course, malls, kind of what we had mentioned before, but, you know, there are a lot of non-trad, you know, opportunities in this world, mm-hmm. including, you know, universities, entertainment centers. You know, it'd be cool if you put one of these on a cruise ship. At least that's selfishly what I think after having been on a cruise recently, which was full of mostly awful options. But, so yeah, I mean, talk about what, you know, the franchise operator, you know, can kind of, you know, be agile with here and what they would be looking at. And so far on the kind of interest and the partnerships of, you know, what's been possible for them to grow into.
Well, I think the key, one of the things I learned, and I think like a franchisee, because I was one for so many years. So I built the model completely with that in mind. What does a successful franchisee look like and what do they want? And so we built a model that is very much based on simple operations. That's the key. You've got no fryers, no grills, no exhaust, no, you know, ovens, none of that. You've got one individual who basically makes your, as you said, your sipologist makes the juices. And then all of your, the rest of your team is front of house generating revenue. So as long as they execute it to our standards, it's a hit. It can be a home run for someone. So very simple operation, focus on revenue driven up front. So your labor model is ideal. You don't have a lot of people prepping. You've got everybody selling. We have a great experienced leadership team who supports them. We've got great marketing, you know, really good operations, you know, all those things come together to make it ideal as a really great brand. As for outside of malls, that's key. I think you've hit the nail on the head. Malls are the low-hanging fruit for us. So that's the easy place for us to start. From there, we really want to go into, as you said, transportation centers, anything that has high foot traffic, transportation centers, entertainment centers, sporting arenas, universities.
Yeah. Yeah, colleges to me seem like they would just be an amazing place for something like this. You know, we were talking offline about, you know, for listeners out here, we're based in Chapel Hill, and Sharon's familiar as an NC State grad, which, you know, our UNC people won't hold against her, but
yeah,
you know, it's kind of this idea, you know, years ago, and this, you know, this is still the case. I'm not saying it isn't, but, you know, just holding that Starbucks cup with the logo on it, it was almost like a certain kind of status symbol among younger people for a while. And again, it still is in a lot of ways, but I can just see something like this, you know, that really being the case within a college campus. As I'm sure you can too. But,
totally. Totally. Yeah. We've looked at universities or university adjacent, might be right off campus. But absolutely, we look at that as one of the non-trad locations that are going to be a real opportunity for us. So no doubt.
So tell us a little bit about what it's been like so far. I mean, you know, what has the interest level been like from franchisees? You know, what is the kind of operator, you know, that you're looking for here? You know, you talked a little bit before about them being obviously owner-operator types and people who are in there running things. But, you know, what has it been like since you launched this and in terms of attracting interest and, you know, just looking for the right people to grow?
Well, as you started in the beginning of the call, we started out saying, let's see how this works out, and then went to number two and said, okay, proof of concept, we're feeling really strong about this. How many can we open ourselves? And then started getting a lot of inquiries about franchising. And that process takes a long time. So we dug in and took the time and put together what we think is a very strong FDD, a franchise disclosure document, and the right people and the right components. We're looking for sophisticated entrepreneurs who are self-starters in many ways with regard to getting in there and really being involved, not just owners and not operators. You know, they need to oversee their business. They want to make sure they're building their own infrastructure and have strong leadership at the store level to make sure that they're successful. We would like to see, we sell three store units. That's about it. I mean, if you wanted to buy two of those, great. But again, we're not selling huge territories, trying to lock into 10 and 20 in a short time. I think our biggest challenge has been we have really strong interest from a franchise perspective, really strong. We want to find the right locations. So that has been probably a little bit of a hurdle in terms of our getting open fast enough. This year, we have quite a bit on the books, so I think this is going to be a breakout year for us, and I'm really excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I think somebody once told me there are more 8,000 square foot restaurant spaces than there are 800 square foot spaces.
That's true. I don't know who told you, but it is true. Yeah.
So if you want to go buy like a, you know, a giant box, you know, sitting off the side of a main road, you're probably more likely to find that than you are to find an 800 square foot mall shop spot in a plus real estate area.
Exactly.
So, like, it's a very interesting concept. And for the same reasons you've been saying, low cost to entry, you know, if you have the right concept, ROI is a little easier. You don't need 187 people to staff it, whatever it might be.
And you know what? That even resonates when you're looking for the GM or the leadership level at the store, because again, you got a guy or a woman who are running a QSR or a fast casual with 50 employees. In our model, you have 12 to 15 employees at most. So who wouldn't like that? And they're doing high volume, you know, our AUVs are doing pretty well. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to have to, I've been trying to teach myself how to read FDDs over the past 5 years of my life. And I'll tell you, they can be very confusing. There are definitely some brands who fill them out differently than others. And there doesn't seem to be a very standard approach. So, but they are fun reading. So I'll be very interested to see how it develops. You know, I think, I think a lot of times, especially nowadays, there's a lot of growth in this sector coming from opportunity, you know, just in the way that things that had kind of happened. But it isn't always driven by consumer demand. But I do think the beverage space is being driven by what guests actually want now. So it'd be exciting to see how you all develop.
Yes.
Here in the near future.
And the beauty of that too is, Danny, I feel like, you know, people eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They might snack too, but the key is beverages are enjoyed all day. So right. We have a much larger, longer day part. And that's helpful. I think that's very helpful. And finally, there's something new. You know, I think everybody's scrambling for the next new idea. And this has been an exciting one to build. an exciting one to develop, and we have fun with it. We sort of, as you had mentioned, sapistas, we're sort of making fun of ourselves. You know, we're have a good time, come have a nice, great quality, you know, beverage, and, you know, laugh while you're doing it. So,
yeah, I mean, so many brands look at this space as like a how to solve the 2 p.m. slump or whatever. And they start launching beverage programs. But to your point, I would say that most of the times they are just 80% sugar. So, you know, not that they don't taste good, but yeah, so, you know, you don't always feel so great about drinking it. So it's a, I think it's a good place to start from a area where that's who you are. And to offer people an alternative, you know, where they don't have to drink this bright pink thing that maybe is not good for you.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Sharon, thank you so much for joining us. Before I let you go, though, as I do with everybody, you know, because we do have a lot of franchise type people who listen to this podcast, you know, either operators themselves or franchisors, and a lot of times sometimes want to learn more about the concept. So if they do, what is a good place to reach you? Would it be through the website, which is what everybody says?
You know, that is one way, and definitely that's where you're going to learn the most quickly, and then you can fill out quick little, you know, information and send it in to us, or you can write us at info@sipfreshjuice.com.
Gotcha.
And that's another opportunity. But the website really does give you a pretty darn good snapshot of what it looks like. And then from there, we reach out pretty quickly and have a conversation and start to cultivate whether this is the right match for both. We love for you to see the business, and for sure you should. The potential prospect will meet our leadership team. We think that's really important. And that usually happens either discovery day or even prior to it, where they have an opportunity to meet either our ops director or our marketing person. Somebody is in the conversation early on so that they can ask good questions and we can get a better assessment if this is a good fit for all.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Sharon. It's been a pleasure exploring the brand here. As I said before, we will look forward to seeing where it goes. And for everybody out there who's listening, as always, we appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Danny. Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.